This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the Language on the Move podcast, a channel on the New Books Network. My name is Ingrid Piller, and I'm Distinguished Professor of Applied Linguistics at Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia. My guest today is Dr. Jasna Novak-Milic. Dr. Novak-Milic is the director of the Croatian Studies Center here at Macquarie University. The Croatian Studies Center at Macquarie University just turned 40. Congratulations. And today we're going to talk about Croatian studies in the diaspora and, more generally, small languages in higher education. Welcome to the show, Jasna.
Thank you, Ingrid, for having me.
Dobrodošli.
Dobrodošli.
Listeners can't see where we are, but we are sitting in the Croatian Studies Library here at our university, and we are surrounded by shelves of books in Croatian and a number of other languages in which Croatian studies are being done. And maybe, Jasna, can you tell us off by telling us a bit about this library and the Croatian Studies Center at Macquarie more broadly?
Sure. So maybe just a small correction. So the center was established in 1994, I believe. But it was 40 years that we commemorated recently was to commemorate 40 years of Croatian studies at Macquarie as the program, as a language program, and also Croatian Studies Foundation, which is a sister organization that secures the funding for the program. So the studies, the center is a little bit newer. However, it does... it is a home of this beautiful library that has approximately 4,500 to 5,000 titles. And basically the library is the result of long-term efforts of the Croatian community, but also Croatian government that made efforts to collect those titles that are all basically either extremely relevant Croatian literature, the reference books mainly, or is literature about Croatian migration, primarily to Australia and New Zealand, but also other parts of Europe, or literature written by Croatian migrants about their experiences. So, it's a quite a rich library that has some of the titles that are quite rare. It's also quite unique to our knowledge. This is the only such resource center in Australia, definitely, and probably maybe also globally outside of Croatia, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are many universities in the world that where you can study Croatian studies. And as you say, there are probably not all that many Croatian studies centers outside Croatia. So maybe can you tell us a bit about how the center came into existence and also a bit about the history of Croatian in Australia?
Yeah, maybe we can then go backwards and start with Croatian in Australia. So Croatian came to Australia with the first Croatian migrants who started coming to Australia in the gold rush era, so long, long time ago. Even the major waves of migrants came in the 60s and 70s, and a smaller wave of Croatians, primarily from Bosnia at the time and Herzegovina, was in the 90s. So most Croatians that are living in Australia today came in the 60s and 70s, as I said, and they brought their culture and their language. And it was due to their lobbying and their efforts that actually very early in 1979, Croatian was recognized as under the name of Croatian in Australia, which was earlier than in homeland, which at the time was Yugoslavia, where Croatian was one of the official languages.
That's a really fascinating story. Maybe you can tell us about that, because I remember when I was an undergraduate student, the program at our university then was called Serbo-Croatian, and you could study the Serbo-Croatian language. But what's the relationship there, and why is it Croatian here, and why did that name start?
Well, this is a really, that probably topic would require its own podcast episode. And the history of Croatian language is quite complex, but let's try to make it as simple as possible. So, of course, first of all, Croatian has a very long history. I'm talking about Croatian language. So we have inscriptions in Croatian, or then mentioned Croatian names, or that were written in that old Croatian script that we call glagolitic or glagolica, that date in 12th century. The first mention of the Croatian language was actually sometime in 13th century, late 13th century, so Croatian as the language. First Croatian grammar was written in the very early 17th century. So Croatian has a very long history as Croatian language. And then at some point in 19th century, early 20th centuries, there were those ideas of pan-Slavic ideas of mutual language as well, and it's a brotherhood between Slavic nations and so on. I mean, there is no doubt that a lot of Slavic languages, especially South Slavic languages, to which Croatian belongs to that group, that they are mutually intelligible to a certain extent, some more, some less. So, however, Croatians do kind of, not just Croatian, but obviously based on what I just said about the history, Croatian had language had its own development throughout many, many centuries, and then sometime in rather recent history, there were the ideas of, well, they are very similar, we don't need to, or, you know, we understand each other. We can also join to fight those kind of, stronger that are around us in terms of languages, but also politics and so on. I'm talking about German, Hungarian, Latin as well. So there were different reasons for that. And I'm not going to say that Croatians were not part of those ideas. However, interestingly enough, while at certain times Serbo-Croatian was something that was, I would say, almost imposed to us, I was born in the 70s, and the subject at school that I've taken in Yugoslavia was never called Serbo-Croatian. My subject in my little, grade book said Croatian or Serbian. So basically you got to choose which variant of the, or which language you speak and you were tested on and assessed on.
Right.
So I don't know. So, but we also know that, for example, American linguists, it's just easier because there are a lot of similarities, especially in grammar, but then also vocabulary. So.
Yeah, I guess so. I was just also curious because I remember you telling us at some point that Australia was the first country that recognized Croatian language, or where Croatian was used again. So maybe you can tell us about that story within Australian multiculturalism, that Croatian then again becomes its own language, if you will.
I'm not 100% certain that it was the first or the only, but it's definitely very early. I'm pretty sure that it could be. But because of the huge influx of Croatian migrants to Australia, and at that time there were a lot of those, so Croatians migrated to Australia for primarily two reasons. Those earlier ones, and then some in 60s and 70s, migrated here due to economical reasons, simply because at times there was such poverty there that they were literally hungry. And the other reason were political reasons, where they were, for example, not able to say that they were Croats, or that the language that they speak is Croatian. So when those people moved here, you know, and Australia being a multicultural society, they probably found that kind of opportunity to fight for that language, that identity, and to call the language what it is, especially because Australia was offering, you know, to start community language schools, to offer for children to continue learning and the language of their parents and grandparents. So, but the Croatians that arrived here wouldn't want this language to be called what they felt was not or shouldn't be the name of the language. And they fought and lobbied, and in 1979, as I said, it was recognised first, I think, in New South Wales, and then slightly later, a little bit later in Victoria as well, and then nationally. And ever since, it's been offered in community language schools under the name of Croatian language, and even on HSC level, and also then at the university from 1983.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned now community schools, and also that it can be formally studied at HSC level. HSC is like the high school graduation certificate for those of you listening outside New South Wales. So can you maybe tell us about who the Croatian language learners now are, and how Croatian has been passed on from those migrants in the 60s and 70s to their children and grandchildren?
So let's start with who are current students, and then we'll see where this takes us. So currently, the majority of the students still, and throughout those 40 years of Croatian studies at Macquarie since they started in 1983-1984, majority of the students were and still are those of Croatian background. Back then, that was the first generation that migrated here, or some migrated as small children, or the first generation born here. These days, I see, you know, some of my students are second or even third generation of Croatians that were born here. So they fall in under many definitions under heritage speakers. So primarily Croatian backgrounds, but more and more we see actually different profiles of students. Some are studying Croatian or learning Croatian because their partners are Croatian or of Croatian background. Some are studying because their neighbour is Croatian and they just want to be able to communicate in that language with them as well. Some have just, they come and say, oh, I just fell in love when I was travelling around that part of Europe, so I like how it sounds, so I want to learn it. So the profiles are different, and a lot of our students are mature students, which is also interesting. It's almost like you have to reach a certain age if you are, for example, a heritage speaker, when it kind of hits you that it is important to speak the language of your ancestors, of your family, or that when you go back and visit, that it's much easier to sit around the table when you understand the conversations and that you kind of get to know your relatives and friends much on a much deeper level when you can speak the language. So when it comes to, so both the studies and the Croatian community schools and the fact that we offer Croatian at that high school certificate level, both in nationally in the whole Australia, these are results of Croatian community efforts or the efforts of individuals who had that vision that it's really important to maintain culture and therefore also language. And even today, most of those organisations, whether we speak of community language schools or even the organisation that I mentioned that is our sister organisation, Croatian Studies Foundation, they are basically a group of volunteers, enthusiasts, who just see that this is an important thing to do, and they keep going, right? And yeah.
And so it's mostly like the second and third generation that is now carrying Croatian studies and language learning in Australia, is that right?
Yes, I would say so. So second generation or first, still first generation born here and the second, if we think of community leaders and teachers, but third generation maybe students and second. So we see an overlap of generations currently. So yeah, but a lot of our teachers are already teachers, community language teachers who were born in Australia.
And are the Croatians good language maintainers? You know, like in Australia, we often see that different community groups have different rates of heritage language maintenance, and some groups, particularly Western European groups, are really poor at maintaining their languages. Other groups are better and maintain the language into the second, third, even fourth generation. So where do the Croatians sit in that overall kaleidoscope of Australian multilingualism?
This is a really difficult question, and I never thought about that. So I think I would dare to say that actually, taking everything into consideration, I think Croatians in Australia are actually doing really well. And this is due to the fact that there is also infrastructure and government kind of support in doing that. The fact that, you know, those volunteers, teachers would get some resources, or they can get the space where they will have the classes on Saturdays and so on. So however, it's really hard to maintain a language like Croatian so far away from homeland, I think. So we are like some 20,000 kilometres away. You know, it takes a whole day by plane to get there. So it's much easier to, for example, for Croatians in Germany to maintain language where they can, or Austria even, they can travel almost every month or every second weekend and spend some time with grandparents and friends and speak the language. So here it's really difficult, but due to numerous Croatian organizations from folklore and sport and clubs and of course, again, all of these language and culture programs, I think Croatians are doing rather well 40 years later or 50 years later after that biggest influx, or even more, 70 now. Yeah. So the language is getting weaker in the community, so there are not many events or organizations that will use Croatian as their primary language these days, so English is very dominant. However, the sense of importance to maintain the language, which we then see in enrollments in the community language schools, just in Sydney we currently have 300 children taking, and this is just the high school, primary school level. So I think these are pretty good results. Mm-hmm. And again, the number of speakers is dropping drastically, but that's due to the fact that the Croatian migrants in Australia are rather old migration group, right? So, but there is another issue to that as well, that, you know, Croatians in Croatia as well, we're always fascinated with languages, and like learning foreign languages was always important. So even when you end up wanting to go and continue learning Croatian in Croatia, spend some time with your relatives, some of my students will say, yes, but I come there and they all speak English to me because they want to practice their English. Right. So there are numerous reasons why it's really hard. So I think that every effort, the fact that we have enrollments, that we have interest in people in this program at Macquarie University, that we still have the program on SBS Croatian that's regularly being listened to, and we know that because they get feedback, good or bad, right? They're doing pretty well, I would say, still. Yeah. Even though I sometimes feel I'm a native speaker of Croatian, and people are really reluctant to speak Croatian to me here in Australia. Yeah. Because they all feel that they're not speaking it well enough.
Right.
Yeah. However, I think like anything's better than nothing, and I actually think, like I said, that they're doing a really, really good job.
Yeah, that's true. Let's maybe go back to Croatian studies here at Macquarie, and you've told us already about the students that you teach. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about your students, and also what else does the Croatian Studies Centre do in addition to teaching Croatian language courses?
So I haven't been here for such a long time. So I've taken this role in 2020. So I'm in my fifth year. Before that, for a couple of years, I was a casual sessional lecturer alongside my predecessor, Luca Budak, who was the director of the program in the center for more than 35 years, and who was one of the founders as well. So my time here hasn't been that long, but since I've been here, we offer Croatian as a major, minor, as specialization within international studies. It is possible to study Croatian to all other students from other universities who want to take elective units with us through the cross-institutional program. Individual units can be taken as non-award, and our most popular program so far has been the diploma, where, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of mature students taking that program. Unfortunately, the diploma is currently not being offered, so we'll see how that goes. But this is so, and we see students primarily taking diploma or as minor. And as I said, they are very different profiles, and their ages range from 18 to 70 something. So I'm really happy to tell you that actually a couple of days from today, one of my students in his 70s is having his graduation ceremony, who's just finished a diploma in Croatian language, does not have Croatian background, the partner is Croatian. And yeah, that's going to be a huge celebration.
That's so beautiful. It is. Fantastic. Are you also involved in training community language teachers? Is that part of the role of Croatian studies?
It's not as a part of the kind of, description of the role, but this is a thing that we do, and this relates to your previous question, what does the centre do? We essentially do a lot of things. I've done a lot of things throughout those 40 years, and I can only take a little bit of credit for the last couple of years. But the centre's primarily is communicating with the community in general, with the community language schools, with other Croatian organisations, all in efforts to maintain the culture, language, support any of projects and events that have that as a main goal. So we do organise different things, and basically that's how you and I met, actually, when you came as a keynote at one of those professional development seminars that we organised for community language teachers. So the centre tries to support efforts of the community, and we'll do that in any way it can, whether that's, by supplying or getting the books from Croatia that might be helpful for their classes or for their students or for those teachers, or whether that's bringing guests from Croatia, guest speakers, and or us organizing something for them every once in a while. But like I said, that's not the only thing we do. So the centre primarily is a research centre, so it used to be more active with more staff before, and the primary topics were, of course, Croatian migration to Australia and New Zealand, but we also do research on language maintenance. The centre also publishes either work by Croatian Australians, we do publish a scholarly journal called Croatian Studies Review that just also commemorated 25 years last year. So that way, for example, the journal, we are kind of dedicated to publish scholarly work on Croatians, on anything Croatian, Croatian culture, Croatian history, folklore, language, literature, in English, so that we get a broader audience, not always in Croatian. So that's one other thing. So we also do, in the last couple of years, we have our own podcast in collaboration.
Maybe tell us about that, because it's such a fantastic outreach.
We started a podcast with SBS Croatian several years ago, 3 years ago. And it was an idea of my former boss, because before I started working here, I had a short trip or excursion to journalism and worked for SBS Croatian. And we said, like, well, how can we cater for those speakers of Croatian who are not beginners? Because there are a lot of programs, everything starts from the beginning. There's most books for beginners, there's most programs for beginners or the lower intermediate. But, you know, what if you're a speaker, but you've been living here, you were born here, and what we see with migrant groups, and this is, it doesn't matter what primary language they speak at home, that their language becomes kind of a kitchen language, right? So when they travel back to Croatia, where they, you know, meet people within their professional circles, they experience issues in expressing themselves and they feel like a bit childish. Sometimes they feel even they say stupid and then they're reluctant to speak. So how do we cater for the group of speakers who are rather fluent yet are lacking those the specific terminology, a little bit of more sophisticated language, so to help them, you know, improve their speaking and listening skills. So Marijana Buljan, who's the executive producer of Croatian, SBS Croatian, and myself, we said, like, okay, how about, you know, a podcast to fill that gap where people can listen to the news? Because the normal news that when you turn on the Croatian television radio is generally too fast. Croatian speaks very fast, which probably I'm speaking also a little bit fast. So Croatian speed fast, and that's too fast for those speakers to follow. So let's just take news, and SBS News would have a little bit of everything. They would have social issues, they would have indigenous issues, they would have technology, they would have, during coronavirus pandemic, there was a lot of medical terminology involved as well. So that was a kind of good platform to choose the stories that SBS is normally running, to simplify them a little bit and to read them a little bit slower for that type of audience. And we primarily had in focus Australian Croatians. However, now, 3 years later, the numbers are showing that average number of downloads are like 3,000 per episode.
Wow.
They're weekly episodes. And for a language like Croatian that has globally like maybe 5-6 million, very optimistically 6 million speakers, we think that's that is amazing. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, it's been listened to globally everywhere.
That's really, really fantastic. Look, let's maybe broaden out a bit from Croatian to questions of heritage language, because I mean, I think your program here is like the Croatian Studies program at Macquarie is really, really fantastic. And you've also said that, you know, there are all these community efforts and all these volunteers to maintain Croatian and support Croatian, and of course you've just spoken about your Easy Croatian podcast. And I guess do you have any advice, almost, I'd say, is there a model in the way Croatian studies is organized at university levels but also at other levels that could serve as a model for other particularly smaller community languages who are all struggling with these issues of how do we maintain the language into the next generations and how do we keep these connections going, how do we build the confidence of younger people?
Yeah, there is a lot involved, and I think Croatian community in particular in Australia has been quite lucky. I think there were just favourable circumstances in play ever since it all started. So it all started essentially, to my knowledge, which I learned from the literature, is with the Australian government trying to pilot a program where some universities would offer minority or smaller languages. And I think Macquarie basically, you know, raised their hand and said, like, okay, we'll do some of the Slavic languages. And the program was offered to cater for more than just Croatian. There were Croatian and Serbian, Macedonian, Ukrainian. So there were quite a few of Slavic languages. And the pilot program was supposed to last for 3 years. And those communities that got involved, because communities were engaged in looking for lecturers and so on, they were told, okay, you can continue with that program, but you have to help with funding. So Croatians were one of the few groups at the time who got together, who understood the importance and value of that program at the university at the time, who really started fundraising to maintain the program. So that was one. There were others who were doing that, but with time, that kind of the funding from the community was not enough anymore, and for different reasons, different languages gradually were discontinued.
Yeah, because essentially Croatian is the only language that has continued since that
Correct.
Original period.
The only one. Mm. So the most recent one that was discontinued was Polish in 2020. Mm. So, but then there was another lucky element to it, that since Croatia became independent in 1991, most Croatian governments, if not all, really saw the kind of needs and Croatian diaspora in general as their priority. And really programs like this are really kind of on top of the list of the valuable programs outside of Croatia that Croatian governments want to support. So 20 years ago, the Croatian government, so the funds from the community were not as large anymore to maintain the program. It was getting harder to get those funds for the program to keep running. So Croatian government got involved with basically annual donations to the program and to the centre. And that has been ongoing still. And Croatian government is contributing alongside the Croatian community in Australia, and that's that lucky kind of circumstance that happened. So what we see in our case here, in the case of Croatian community, we have a strong community with very enthusiastic and hardworking individuals and groups who are really dedicated to maintain community language schools, Croatian at the tertiary program, Croatian as a high school certificate, on a high school certificate level, and so on. We have Croatian government who is happy to chip in for such programs to run. And we were also lucky that there was a university who wanted to be our home for 40 years. To give advice to others, I don't know how to achieve in 21st century with everyone, on their phones and less volunteering and probably more watching TikTok videos. I don't know how you get, that kind of critical mass of people, but also the favorable circumstances if you have to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. However, I really do believe that even a small efforts of few individuals can lead with good ideas, with a little bit of luck, can potentially lead to something like this.
Yeah, look, and I mean, I think you've been fantastically successful. Now, let's maybe change perspective. So you and I, we're both convinced of the value of Croatian studies and of maintaining heritage languages generally in a diasporic context, the value this brings to the individual, to the communities, but also to Australia, broader society, our engagement with the broader world, the multicultural, linguistically diverse world we live in. So both of us, we're super convinced of the value of maintaining not only Croatian, but all these other community languages. But now, if we sort of switch perspective a bit to, I guess, the Anglophone society and the institutions in which we live, we sort of see a bit more skepticism, I guess, in terms of questions like, why do we need a small language like Croatian? And What would you say to that kind of criticism that we often get? Well, it's just a small language, so what's the point? Kind of, why should people still learn Croatian?
I think no speaker of a small language would ever think anything like that, and that can only come from languages that are as huge as English and maybe some others, but primarily English. And English here, I mean, not specifying any particular culture, but English is a global language. Maybe it's not, why is it important? Maybe the question is, how much would we be losing if we lose those small languages? I mentioned, for example, history of Croatian language. But that history of language is also history of culture, of civilization, of history in general. All that kind of, you know, all those books written in the language, does that mean that someday there will be no people who can understand them? I don't know. I mean, small or big language, what does that mean if it's part of somebody's identity? If that's the language you breathe, if that's the language you develop your ideas in, it's part of you. So I don't think actually that I use small languages, the term small languages as well, especially when we speak so kind of colloquially about languages. But there are no small and big languages, and it's just I think the language you are born into, or languages that you're born into, no other language that you learn later can make you feel the same way, and will never be that language in which you dream, in which you develop some of the, you know, ideas, in which you plan, or in which you count, essentially. I think, to me, all languages are equally important. Mm-hmm. And on a kind of everyday level with my students, to feel fully fair, sometimes I do kind of, what's the point, you know, teaching a handful of students somewhere in Australia, 20,000 kilometres from Europe, a language of 5 or 6 million speakers. But then when you have a student who has just come back from visiting relatives in Croatia, who has just had a phone call after 20 years and reconnected with her family and says, like, I finally understand, I can finally speak to my auntie, or we are now speaking again, or now I understand them. That's one thing. Or the other one, when I have a student who doesn't have Croatian background, a student who learned Croatian as their first foreign language, and suddenly after 3 years of studying understands that, oh, there are concepts in a language that are non-translatable, that are simply not translatable. That kind of, you know, that realization that not everything is cut to fit English, and to understand that, oh, but that's because people think in a different way, see the world in a different way. Well, that's why it's worth learning languages. And I think learning small languages is even more fun than learning mainstream big languages, because there are a lot of people who learn big languages. But
I mean, I think you've made a fantastic case, and I wasn't so on about the small language, but really this importance of language learning to English speakers. I mean, it's really about this in Australia that oftentimes you get this view, well, English is enough because, as you earlier said, everyone overseas learns English, but you really miss something in your, you know, you miss a huge part of your education if you never have that realization, as you say, that civilizations are different. And
you know, Ingrid, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but I think you and I are people like, as from a European context, where learning languages is still a privilege and it's seen as a prestigious thing. So just as you do sports and music as a kid, you would be sent to your language school as well. I think we can't even really imagine what it is like not to be able to speak other languages. And I really wouldn't want to be in that position. You know, it feels amazing where you can, whether you travel or whether you're not moving, but you meet people from different cultures, you do get, even with a little bit of language, you do get a different insight in their lives, in their cultures, in their, you know, everything they do and how they see the world. And I think, people who are not learning languages, have never learned languages, are missing a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are seeing now an additional danger, really, to language learning and teaching and these language programs at universities, not only from this dominant status of English, but also from this emerging idea that actually AI can do it for us, and that we don't need to learn languages anymore because, you know, AI and automated translation will do things for us. Can you maybe speak a bit to the role that AI is playing in your experience with language teaching?
With language teaching, it's very challenging, especially when it comes. So if I was just teaching my students Croatian for fun, maybe it wouldn't be such a problem. But because we also have to assess our students, it is challenging. Because even before ChatGPT, that became quite good in translating things, for years they've been now using Google Translate and so on, and essentially you're sometimes marking those assignments and you're thinking, like, who am I marking here? And, you know, what's the point again? However, I think, I don't know where this AI, when it comes to languages, will take us, and it's a little bit scary. And but again, I can't, I really believe that both at the beginning and at the end of the process is human, and nothing can replace that. I almost feel like it will become even more important to become more proficient in languages, because unless you're proficient, how do you judge whether what you get as an output is correct? And we know that AI gets it really wrong, maybe not often, but what if that's a very delicate, sensitive situation? You don't want to risk it. But how do you then tell whether it's right? So I think you can use AI amazingly well these days if you are already a proficient speaker, and then it will do miracles for you. But if you rely on that, it's just like what we mentioned earlier, if you're one of those people who never learned another language, how do you know what AI is serving you? I mean, I can't remember now, the other day we had a really beautiful example, which unfortunately I can't remember example at the moment, but it was basically the AI, or it was Google Translate, completely missed the gender of the Croatian noun, and you got so basically the meaning was he kissed his own wife, but the meaning ended up that the ChatGPT gave you was he kissed his other person's wife. I mean, imagine, like, in a business where such a detail like that can completely change, you know, or, you know, be interpreted as opposite. So I wouldn't want to rely on AI 100%. And I think we always have to be a step ahead of AI, essentially, to be able to monitor what it does.
Absolutely. I think also in terms of language ideologies, it really changes how we think about language. Because as you said earlier already, so if you just have English, if you're this monolingual person, then you think every other language is just a one-on-one translation and just everything fits, right? And AI or automated translation really reinforces that notion, because it just gives you a one-on-one probabilistic one-on-one translation. And so it actually reinforces this idea that every other language is just another code, if you will, and that code is exactly the same, like some mathematical kind of transposition. But of course that entirely misses what it means to speak another language and to live through another language, and to,
or makes you another person.
Yeah.
makes you sound like you would never want to sound. And mm-hmm. but then again, how do you judge that this is like I would use it sometimes to correct my English grammar, or sometimes also just to test it, what my students can get out of it, and so that I can kind of restructure the assessments that I do with students. So I've played, I've had a fair share of playing around with ChatGPT and all of these. And yeah, and then sometimes, you know, give him like, just edit this text for me, that email. And that makes you sound so weird, or some like a robot, like mm-hmm. like what you're saying, everything becomes the same, artificial. That's not how I want to sound. I want this to be, for example, informal. Mm-hmm. I want this to convey that we are friends and colleagues, not, you know, creating a distance between us. But all of these things, the style. So it's not about grammar and language, it's about style and you know, how do you, I don't think the machine will get it right when it comes to those elements of language as well. Because language is not just grammar and vocabulary.
Yeah, I think it's impossible. It's actually completely impossible because it is a machine. And I think we should never forget that. And I mean, just calling it artificial intelligence, and I put air quotes around that, of course gives us this illusion that there isn't, but there isn't. I mean, it's a stochastic parrot, as Emily Bender calls it. It's a machine, yeah?
Yeah.
So languages really are what makes us human in so many ways. Maybe to wrap this up, what's your next project in terms of your professional life, in terms of Croatian teaching or the research you do or the big conference you've just hosted?
Well, one thing I never lack is ideas. I do lack time. So one of the things is that I would really like to see, so I said earlier that like barely 5 years ago I took over this position from a predecessor, and the amount of work that was done in those first 35 years of this center and the program were just enormous, and that's thanks to all those individuals that came before me and the community as a whole. I first and foremost, I would like this to continue because I really believe that there is still value in it for the individuals who might choose to come here and study Croatian, for the broader Croatian Australian community, for Croatians globally, because as you mentioned, we just recently had in February we had a conference every 5 years. That's another thing that the center does. We organize an international scholarly conference. This year we had more than 130 delegates and guests with more than 70 papers. It was a multidisciplinary conference, so that kind of gathered Croatians, all of those interested in Croatian history, language, culture, sport, in one place here at Macquarie to discuss all those topics. And it was unique in that way. So even the broader Croatian community benefits from what we do, even though sometimes it feels that it's on a small scale. With the podcast that we mentioned, we are really reaching Croatians, or those wanting to learn Croatian in all corners of the world. We are the only accredited proficiency testing center here at Macquarie as well for Croatian, so potentially also catering for future, you know, teachers, in addition to the program that we run, teachers, interpreters, which there is still need for those occupations as well. So we know now that the generation that we mentioned earlier that came here in the 60s, 70s, there are a lot of those now who are living in aged care centres. Mm-hmm. So their caterers don't speak Croatian very often, yet we know that with dementia, with Alzheimer, with some of those conditions, or simply with age, mm-hmm. or simply because some of those citizens never learned the English properly, now have faced issues communicating. So I think there is still need for a centre like this, so I would like it to continue. In that regard, I continue with my own project, which with all the teaching and everything I do, and unfortunately doesn't get enough attention as it, I would like it to have. So it's about home language maintenance, to say what the kind of examples of good practice are among Croatian families and what they do well to maintain the language. Continue with the journal, with different projects. I love when we are engaged in a community. I love the fact that we work with so many other Croatian organizations. So from, Croatia House, who organizes annual Croatian Film Festival, which is also an important part of maintaining the culture, or just recently connecting with a school in Western Australia. So I really would like to see Croatian programs, language programs, and also organizations working even more closer together, so that we can, continue with the things that we can do well. And I think there are things that we have the world to show. Yeah. And from, famous inventors of the tie or of a pen that we all use every day, or, to share then successes of our sport and All these things.
Good luck. Yes. Now, I hope the Croatian Studies Center here will continue for a long time. It's such a fantastic initiative and such an important effort for multicultural Australia. So, hvala. Thanks again for your time. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our channel, leave a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, and recommend the Language on the Move podcast and our partner, the New Books Network, to your students, colleagues, and friends. Till next time.